Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages, it's Tuesday, it's Bluegrass Bios, and good morning to Lexington. You're listening to WLXL LPFM Lexington Community Radio. We're live from STEAM Academy in North Lexington in studio for the last time for the summer, at least in the complete version. We've got Benjamin Mojo Wolf.
Hey, Kyle.
Lexington YOLO Sours.
Hey.
And Kyle Bozo Bigelow. Our guests today are the Lexington Herald Leader's government accountability reporter, John Cheeves. Then in the second hour, we'll have the president of the Kentuckians Chorus, Jeremy Bran. Then John England, he's the market manager of the Lexington Farmers Market. And we'll finish off with a secret special guest just to send off our lovely co-host, Lexington Sours.
Oh, no, I'm nervous.
She's just hearing about it now, ladies and gentlemen.
Don't be nervous.
It makes me excited.
Okay.
All right. How are you feeling today, Lex?
I'm feeling wonderful.
Yeah?
Feeling good. It's a nice, beautiful day outside. And
Are you excited to get to McLean County?
I am. I think it'll be full of lots of adventures and new things.
You've been out on the farm lately, huh?
I have been out on the farm lately.
How's that been? Like a like a step back in time for you, huh?
Like I grew up on the farm. It's not really that much different.
Okay, but you've been without the internet for a week, you were saying.
Yeah, we've had some internet issues, so.
Okay, so normally you would have the internet.
Oh, yeah, it's not just we're weird off the grid. Not that being off the grid is weird, but.
Okay.
We usually have technology.
Yeah, we used to just call that life.
Right.
In general. Yeah.
I don't miss it.
We got along without it before.
Exactly.
Yeah. All right. So I don't have anything off the top of my head. Well, how about this? We'll just do a little bit of a preview so we can talk our way through this. John Cheeves is coming on. As I said, he's the government accountability reporter for the Herald Leader.
Busy man.
Yeah. One of the top stories that we want to get into him about is this Tim Longmire corruption case and subsequent investigation.
Yeah, because we touched on that briefly when we had Mr. Brammer from the Herald Leader on, but we didn't go in depth. It was just kind of an aside to a bunch of other things we were talking about.
There is a little bit of a rabbit hole here from the more I'm reading. Like, as far as the... it's not embezzlement, was it? Like money laundering? Like there's
campaign contributions, campaign finance.
He through kickbacks from government contracts. And if I get off here to your ear, stop me. But basically, since he was Tim Longmire, personnel cabinet secretary for. Former Governor Steve Beshear, and then later the governor's son, Attorney General Andy Beshear. He was a higher up enough guy that he had the say so in which contracts would get chosen from private vendors, right?
Yeah, and that's one of the things I want to ask Mr. Cheeves about is what exactly a state personnel secretary does. From 9 to 5, or what is he supposed to be doing from 9 to 5?
Yeah, don't you think? Well, I don't know enough about the that process to figure out why that position. I mean, maybe that falls under the responsibilities of that position. Do you know, Lex, who's in charge of that kind of stuff?
I do not.
I mean, I don't know. Yeah, but we'll have an expert on.
But I think the basic thing was they solicited campaign contributions from employees of a company, and then the company reimbursed the employees for the donations.
Right.
And you can't do that.
Yeah. It's finally, I think we can say over the air, the consulting firm that's associated with this they've been, I haven't seen anything on a federal indictment, but this originally got rolling because an undercover FBI informant.
Well, I think it was an employee came for. We'll come to, this is another thing we want to ask about.
So there's a whistleblower aspect.
Yeah, there was somebody there. So the FBI had to have something to go on, and then we'll get to the sort of the bottom of that too. But yeah, there was an undercover.
So we're probably FBI doing guy. Our audience a little bit of a disservice.
Speculating first. No, it's teasing. We'll call it teasing.
Okay, yeah, teasing. Yeah, yeah. Teasing with tons of misinformation.
Yeah.
And well, I think we've yeah, done go ahead,
it is a very complex issue because you've got so many different parties coming in and really struggling with that transparency that you kind of need and expect out of your government. So there's lots of different storylines here, lots of different people involved, and it is really hard to get to the bottom of it, especially as an outsider, as someone who's not talking to these people or who's not asking the questions. And so it is really important for audience members to get involved and to kind of stay aware, because it's easy to miss all the facts.
And a lot of this was spurred on by a change in power that we've had recently. So we'll ask about that too. Just a change in party, parties.
Right.
From Democrat to Republican. So
they must be eating this up over there.
Oh my. You know? It's fun though. It's a rabbit hole with like diverting rabbit holes off to the side. So you can like choose your own adventure with state corruption.
It ends up getting kind of soap opera-y.
Oh, definitely.
You know, this is this kickback thing. I mean, this is tale as old as time, right?
Oh, because absolutely. Yeah.
We have to have private vendors to conduct some of the business. And in this case, it was healthcare related.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
It was this company, MC Squared.
Yeah.
Consulting. Was hired, you know, sort of even in the affidavit that was released by the FBI agent, he described their work as quote crap.
Yeah.
But you know, this is kind of stuff is going to happen all the time when you need entities outside of the government to perform duties for the government,
or even entities within the government to perform that within the government. And those entities get cut quite often. They have their budgets cut, they have their personnel cut, and then
well, and there's this smaller company, I mean, they undercut Humana and Anthem for the purpose of or by offering this bribe, right?
Yeah.
200K plus.
Right.
You know, there's only, I think it was actually a relatively small amount of it that was campaign contributions.
Yeah, yeah, very small very comparatively small.
3%.
To... 3%. Yeah,
yeah. Which raises red flags in my mind of that's how you kind of protect yourself and keep a bit of anonymity to it if you're not openly giving to campaigns.
Oh, you sort of dilute it. Like, you $6,000 unto itself, people would notice, but $6,000 out of $203,000, you might not notice that that so much.
Yeah. Well, last I saw, he was getting fined somewhere in the neighborhood of $225,000. So, crime doesn't pay, ladies and gentlemen. If we have if we have one message for you today, it would be that. All right.
And it's Bob Dylan's birthday, I've been informed, so we had to scramble around the studio to find some Bob Dylan.
Is that
CDs.
Right?
Yeah,
do you have some? Do you have some Dylan for you?
Yeah, we got like three.
I would
four
love
CDs.
To. Do you have? I really only know like a Rolling Stone.
Do you have I think that that's one? The one. No, we don't have that one.
Okay, well then, then I will.
We don't have the biggest hit of his career. Okay.
You have any Jacob
but
Dylan?
You've heard
you got any Wallflowers in there?
I do no.
Okay,
at home.
All right. All right. So how about we do this because we're expecting John. In a few minutes here, we have some music potted up.
Yeah, yeah. Ben. We're ready to go.
All right. So we're going to get off the air here for a second to take you to some music. Continue to tune in for some more hot corruption talk on WLXL LPFM, Lexington Community Radio. This is Bluegrass Bios. All right, we're back on Bluegrass Bios. This is WLXL LPFM Lexington Community Radio on 95.7. We're joined now by John Cheeves. He's the government accountability reporter for the Lexington Herald Leader. He writes stories that hold government officials and agencies accountable for their words and actions. Are you on the line with us, John?
I am.
Hey, how are you doing today?
I'm doing well. Thank you for having me.
Now, do I have you attributed correctly?
Yeah, that sounds like it, I think.
All right, fantastic. If you could tell our audience a little bit about maybe how long you've been reporting in this area.
I have been at the Lexington Herald Leader for just about 20 years now, and I have been the courts reporter, and I have been the one of the Frankfurt State Capitol reporters, and I have been the Washington reporter, and now I'm currently the Enterprise reporter, which just means that I get to go out and, I don't want to say make up stories because that sounds bad, but I get to sort of pick stories that maybe we get to take a little extra time on.
Sure, I have a little bit more freedom.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So, we were joking in studio before you came on about how busy an accountability reporter must be in Frankfurt.
That's true. And unfortunately, the real story of the Frankfurt Press Corps has been shrinkage over the last 20 years. I think the 2000 legislative session, when Paul Patton was governor, that was my first legislative session. And I've seen the day-to-day full-time Frankfurt Press Corps shrink from, I would say, probably between 16 and 18 reporters to, I mean, now just a handful. There's barely, when the legislature's not in session, there's just a handful of people. The AP's got one guy. The Courier-Journal's got one guy. We've got one guy. There's really almost no full-time journalism presence left in Frankfurt, and it's terrible if you think that government bears close watching, because I know that Kentucky's state government has not gotten twice as honest as the press corps. Press corps has shrunk,
right?
But it's the decline of the print industry.
Well, that does seem dangerous because, as journalism students and as journalists, we're taught that journalists are very much the watchdogs in how government goes on, and we kind of act as that outside estate. So, how does that affect how you report?
Well, it obviously we miss a lot more stuff than we used to, and one of the questions I get is, well, what are the big scandals you're missing? And I don't mean to be flip when I say I don't know because we're missing it. But I go back over periods, you know, 10, 15 years ago when we had three or four reporters in our bureau full-time, and I see all sorts of stuff that we were producing. Ernie Fletcher, who was the Republican governor before Matt Bevin, had the misfortune to have some scandals involving hiring and firing of state employees on his watch at a time when both the Courier-Journal and the Herald Leader bureaus and the Associated Press were all still pretty staffed up. So we were poring over documents, and we were filing open records requests, and we were, you know, haunting the grand jury over at the Franklin County Courthouse. We could stay on top of stuff. Now, there's very little of that. You don't know what you don't know, so I couldn't tell you exactly what stories were missing, but I've got a tickler file of five or six stories involving everything from Medicaid to prisons that I'd like to get to eventually, but who knows when eventually is going to roll around.
Well, that kind of leads us into the real reason why you're on today, and that's to talk about Tim Longmire, who was the former personal secretary, correct?
Personnel secretary.
Personnel.
Yeah, the state government's divided into cabinets, and each cabinet has a different chore. And Tim Longmire, for several years under Governor Steve Beshear, was the secretary of the personnel cabinet, and basically he just ran the state employees and overall hiring and firing of the merit workers, people who are the full-time state bureaucracy, and provided salaries and health insurance and other benefits. And it's the health insurance that's particularly important here because what Tim Longmire apparently did, he's pleaded guilty to it, was he took bribes off of a company here in Lexington, kickbacks, in exchange for helping them get some contracts through the state health employee, the state employee health plan.
Okay.
And what services were they supposed to be providing or contracted
thing, to this group provide? Now nobody the group it's a company called MC Squared Consulting, and the company hasn't been charged, and nobody with the company has been charged yet. The federal prosecutors tell us the investigation continues, but Tim Longmire has pleaded guilty to taking bribes from them, so I think we're on safe ground there. With at least saying that much, and I should point out that MC Squared Consulting has not talked to any reporters that I'm aware. They've been dodging our calls. They were a political consulting group. They were run by a longtime Democratic political aide named Sam McIntosh, who was originally from Hazard but lived in Lexington for a long time. And Sam McIntosh had worked for former Governor Martha Lane Collins and for some Democratic state legislators in Frankfurt. And then he went into the political consulting business. And so they helped with people's campaigns. They would do polling, and they would do research on what issues were important to people and how people felt about the candidate. It's not uncommon.
Yeah.
What's weird is why they were doing any work for Humana and for Anthem, the companies
right.
that provided insurance to state workers, to the state employees. health plan, and the only answer is basically it was sort of made up. There didn't have to be focus groups of state employees saying, what do you think about the health insurance plan? There didn't have to be phone surveys. It was make work, and at one point in some of the documents we've gotten in court records, the MC squared consulting people are very clear. I think they call it this is BS work. it was made up. It was made up for them to get money, and it wasn't very high quality. They would, instead of calling 100 people, they would call 20 people for their opinions on the state health plan, and they would just use the 20 answers five times. So it was not only was it unnecessary customer satisfaction work, but largely it was made up.
And how much money was the contract for?
Well, all told, it was about $200,000 that we're aware of, about $197,500 in cash, and about $6,000 in illegal campaign donations. Some of the cash that went to Longmire that also got funneled back in, to me at least, an unknown amount of campaign donations, but give or take about $200,000, say.
Okay, and
now I apologize. That's the kickback money to Tim Longmire. I think
right.
It was a couple million dollars in total contracts to MC squared. It was a couple million,
right?
And that was charged to the insurance companies, which charged their work to the state employee health plan. So it's important to remember here that ultimately several hundred thousand state employees and their families who got soaked for the cost of this.
Yeah, my next question was, where is that money coming from? Is that coming from taxpayers?
It comes from the state employees, and of course, we subsidize the health plan, too. The state of Kentucky is their employer, so we put in X amount.
Oh, okay.
Employees put in X amount. And the federal government, don't ask me to explain how this works, but the federal government helps subsidize the plan, too, which is why this all played out in U.S. District Court with the FBI.
Oh, okay.
When the feds
can
step in, they have to prove that some federal money was involved, and so, you know, almost literally, if you lean against a mailbox, they can say, that's federal property, you know, mail fraud.
Now,
not quite that extreme, but there was some federal money.
So the $2 million, that's in part the employees, that's in part us, and
yes.
It's in part federal money.
Yes.
Now, how did the FBI get turned on to what was going on with this? Who came to them?
They apparently got a tip from one of the employees at MC Squared Consulting who let them know what was going on. And then once they got the tip, the FBI in the last year or two has really stepped up its game in government corruption in Kentucky, both at the local level, at the county level, and at the state level. And they've reopened a presence in Frankfurt. They'd closed their Frankfurt office for a few years, but they're back in town in the capital city. Once they got a tip that, hey, this company is getting contracts and there's kickbacks going to Tim Longmire, they started tailing Tim Longmire. And they had agents with their eyes on him when he was getting bags full of cash at a McDonald's parking lot and in a Kroger parking lot in Woodford County. And they cultivated sources, and they went through his banking records, and they went to the banking records of the company. So once they got the tip, it wasn't too hard to put it together. One big advantage they have that we don't have in the press is they have subpoena powers. So we hear all the time, hey, you know, Mike or Bob or Fred is getting bribes, we think. Unless I can get someone to confess to me, it's hard to prove. The FBI can go and get their bank records and say, hey, Bob or Mike or Fred's got $100,000. It's, you know, unexplainable otherwise.
John, it's sort of easy to look through hindsight colored glasses, if you will, at this point. But what was Tim Longmire's reputation in Frankfurt?
Just as a I don't want to say a Democratic Party hack, because hack has a bad... people call us hacks in the press corps. People seemed to like him. They seemed to think that he was honest. I wasn't aware that he had any reputation for being dishonest. I did not know him personally, other than I had met him once or twice, and I knew he was the personnel secretary. Tim Longmire's deal was he had been chairman for many years of the Jefferson County Democratic Party in Louisville, and obviously that's a very powerful Democratic Party.
Mm-hmm.
He had been in the county attorney's office in Louisville, not so much as a prosecutor as he had been kind of a political liaison. He'd worked between the county attorney and the state legislature. And he was just big into politics. He had a lot of friends. He was a member of the state Democratic Party Central Executive Committee. He worked on Steve Beshear's campaigns for governor. When Steve Beshear got elected, he became deputy personnel secretary and then personnel secretary. He didn't have any one area of expertise. He was just sort of a political glad-hander. And you see these in state government all the time, where, you know, one day they're in charge of vehicle regulation, and the next day they're in charge of water pollution, and the next day they're in charge of senior citizen services, and you think, boy, I sure hope that they're competent and honest, because based solely on their political activities, they're getting put in charge of a lot of stuff. And of course, when Steve Beshear left office last year, Tim Longmire, you know, was going to be out of a job. He stepped down as personnel secretary. He went to work for the campaign of Steve Beshear's son, Andy Beshear, who was running for attorney general. Mm-hmm. And after Andy Beshear got elected attorney general, voila, his new job was deputy attorney general. So he was the number two guy in the chief law enforcement office of the state, even while he was conspiring to continue his bribery campaign.
So it seems like for a while the Beshear administration was relatively scandal-free. It was kind of a breath for Kentucky Democrats, but what does
more
this...
More or less, honestly, there was still the usual piddly stuff that came up. I mean, both we at the Herald Leader and the Courier-Journal from time to time would report on contracts for everything from roadside mowing services to road paving contracts, the usual stuff where the big campaign donors seemed to get the inside track, and it was the old, you know, certain people would get jobs, and but nobody was getting indicted. I wouldn't say it was squeaky clean, but it wasn't the same problem that we had with Fletcher, with Governor Fletcher, where people are getting indicted. This obviously is a black eye that Steve Beshear didn't have before.
Yeah, and wasn't there a thing about partisan hirings at universities, administrations?
Are you thinking maybe the board appointments?
Yes, yes, that's exactly what I'm thinking.
Yeah, by law, the board appointments are supposed to be reflective of the state's political makeup as a whole, and I think mostly it looked like the Democrats were getting packed onto the university boards. And
Yeah,
I wouldn't know if that's a scandal so much as just poor judgment. I don't know if a law gets broken, but this definitely... Steve Beshear left office with his reputation more or less intact, and then it exploded on him, and for good measure, he'd handed this guy down to his son. Mm-hmm. And for the state's attorney general to have his deputy, his number two guy, have to resign and get charged and plead guilty to bribery is just humiliating.
And Andy Beshear recused himself from the investigation, is that
correct? At first he didn't.
Yeah,
well,
right.
It's a federal investigation, and then after it came out, we had a front page story saying that some of these legal donations wound up with Andy Beshear's campaign when he ran for attorney general. Now, there's no evidence that Andy Beshear knew any of this was going on, or that he knew that any of the money was tainted, but it was very embarrassing. And so the next day he told reporters, I'm going to open my own separate state investigation into this guy.
Hmm.
And even though Republicans and others said, well, you know, you shouldn't, because you knew him, you used to employ him, he worked down the hall from you, and in fact there's some suggestion that Andy Beshear's own campaign got ripped off by MC Squared Consulting and by Tim Longmire.
Oh.
But you've got all sorts of conflicts. It's like if somebody robbed my house and then I got to go prosecute them. I'll make sure he gets to prison. He robbed my house.
Oh, yeah.
Andy Beshear, after a week of refusing to recuse himself very quietly, went to the Franklin Commonwealth attorney, Larry Cleveland, and said, psst, I'm going to recuse myself. Please take over. I don't know what's going to happen with the state case. Once the feds have busted you for bribery and you're looking at 10 years in prison, it almost seems redundant for someone else to step in.
Is there any way that the Beshears, that either Beshear can kind of say, oh, we had no idea, or eventually is it going to come back to them and they're going to be just as guilty,
well,
I guess?
They both said, Steve and Andy Beshear have both said that they were shocked and appalled. They had no idea that this bribery was going on. They are personally betrayed, that they considered Tim Longmire a friend. And I was reading email that Andy Beshear had sent out to his staff, internal emails, when it came out, and he said, I feel sick to my stomach. I feel like somebody's punched me in the stomach. And we have no evidence to suggest otherwise.
Okay.
Now, I will say that that Tim Longmire probably is going to be pressured to get a more lenient sentence, to spill whatever he knows. He obviously knows if he got bribed, he knows who gave him the bribes, and so his co-conspirators in that direction probably ought to be sweating. I imagine he's giving some evidence that way. If there was anyone else in state government that worked with him, he might be giving the prosecutor some evidence there. But I don't know that I can speculate. I have no reason to believe that anybody else in the Beshear administration was part of this.
And now, as far as the campaign contributions work, the MC Squared put pressure on their employees, or had their employees make contributions to the campaigns.
Yeah, I don't know if it was much pressure. It's what's called straw donations.
Yeah.
So I go to, I have a company, and I go to Ben, Kyle, and Lex and say, you're all going to give some money, because there's limits. I can only give so much money in a campaign, and on the state level, it's $1,000 per election. So I want to give my good friend Andy Beshear $1,000, and I've already done it. Ben, Kyle, Lex, you each give him $1,000. That's $4,000, all from my company. We'll give them all on the same day. It's bundled. And very clearly, Cheeves Corp is a good friend of the new attorney general or the new governor or whatever. But don't worry. I know I don't pay you very much. I pay you minimum wage. I'll pay you back the $1,000. You'll get it in the back end. Well, that's illegal. It's called a straw donation. What I'm really doing is making four times the legal limit through you.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, it happens. It's very difficult to prove unless somebody comes clean.
Yeah.
You see it all the time in campaigns when somebody who's rich maxes out, and then their children, it says student for their occupation, and sometimes it's like a second grade kid, gives a $5,000 donation to Mitch McConnell or Hal Rogers or something. And I'm trying to picture that conversation with the 8-year-old. Hey, good news, honey, I'm giving you $5,000. Oh, that's wonderful. The bad news is you're giving it to Mitch McConnell. So you always kind of wonder about that sort of thing.
So were they reimbursed through wages? Is that it? Then how
it
that
is
works?
Not clear to me how they were reimbursed, but according to the federal prosecutors, they were reimbursed. The money was made good to them.
Okay, and so the FBI...
It was clear to them up front that it would be.
Yeah, yeah. And so the FBI comes in. Now, they do a little sting operation, is that correct?
I don't know if you'd say sting. Sting implies to me that they had set something up. I think they did surveillance.
Oh, okay.
The sting would be if you set up your own company and offered bribes, I would think. That's my definition. But once they knew, they ran everyone's campaign donations. They tried to get people to talk to them. They did do surveillance. They followed Tim Longmire. To Kroger and McDonald's. They pulled his bank records. They pulled MC Squared's records. They had at least one person, if not two, it's not clear to me, but at least one person wearing a wire because they have actual transcripts of comments.
And they have Sam McIntosh on tape, don't they?
Yeah. So somebody was walking around the MC Squared consulting offices apparently wearing a recording device.
So it seems like Sam McIntosh really used his political knowledge because he was so kind of in the game, I guess is the right way to say it, to get around and to be a little bit evasive with this money laundering and with these bribes, correct?
He definitely knew how the game was played and who to approach, apparently. I had never heard of this fellow, and it doesn't sound like he had been very politically active for some years, at least in Frankfurt. I think he had done some work maybe outside the state. But who would even have thought of this? Who would think if you ran a political consulting firm to even try to get subcontracts off of health insurance companies? That was pretty savvy in its own way.
And you mentioned several times that he didn't give a large amount of money to the campaigns himself. Was that kind of his way of protecting himself?
I would think so, although honestly, a lot of people who are big political operators don't give very much money. They bundle other people's money, or they will run a PAC that collects money, a political action committee that collects money from other people. But I did a big series years ago about Senator Mitch McConnell, who at that point had raised and given away to other Republicans, and for his own campaigns, tens and tens of millions of dollars, big money, huge sums. Mitch McConnell himself, over the course of his 20-odd years in the Senate at that point, had only given about $6,000 or $7,000 in political donations. Sometimes the biggest political operators, don't ask me why, maybe it's psychological, I can't tell you, they don't actually give very much of their own money, but they give other people's money in huge quantities.
And these are all different claims than the ones that Governor Bevin was making a little while back about state employees being coerced into donations. This is a whole other thing.
Yes, that is true, although it all sort of ties together.
Yeah.
Ultimately, he made sort of not-so-veiled references to Longmire there as well. Longmire ran something, or he didn't just run it. He was one of several people who helped run what was called the Capital Club. It had existed years ago in Frankfurt for the Democrats to raise money from Democrats in Frankfurt, which included state employees.
Mm-hmm.
Ernie Fletcher came in for a 4-year Republican administration. It went away. Steve Beshear brought it back, I think, around 2009. 2008, 2009. And Tim Longmire and others helped start it. And the Capital Club would hold golf tournaments and have fundraisers. And it gets a little tricky when you've got people who work for state government, either as a merit or a non-merit employee, who are told, hey, the governor would really like your help, because there does seem to be an implication there. And at least one of Governor Beshear's appointees had to plead guilty to ethics charges and pay a fine. He was a former state lawmaker named Jevidin out of Western Kentucky. because he was apparently calling people at home and on their cell phones using numbers he got from state personnel files, saying, hey, you know, you owe the governor his job. I suggest you give X amount to his reelection campaign. And that's a no-no. Wherever the line is between asking for a donation politely and threatening someone's job, Mr. Jevidan crossed it, and he had to pay a fine to the Executive Branch Ethics Commission as a result.
We're talking to John Cheeves. He's the government accountability reporter at the Lexington Herald Leader. For more information, you can go to Kentucky.com to read his stories or follow him at BG Politics on Twitter. This one might be a little bit more inside journalism, John, but when it comes to these emails, redacted, unredacted, can you tell us what happened there? Like, from what I read, you received several pages of emails to and from Tim Longmire that were just completely blacked out.
That is correct. It's not clear to me why this happened. So Tim Longmire quit his job and got charged by the federal government with bribery. And very shrewdly, the Attorney General's office panicked and thought, oh, my gosh, what's happening here? And they went to the Commonwealth Office of Technology. That's the state agency that runs all of the computers in state government. It's their IT people. And they said, please give us every email that Tim Longmire sent or received while he worked here in the office of the Attorney General. We don't know what he was up to while he was here, but we want to know before anyone else does. That was a really shrewd move. That was smart. And I heard that they did that, and so I put in an Open Records Act request to the Attorney General's office, and I said, whatever you guys got, I want that. Whatever emails you get on Tim Longmire, I want the same thing. Very often, state government gives you a hard time about collecting very many emails. If it's a big batch, they don't want to go searching through a whole bunch of stuff. They can say it's overly burdensome. But if I know that somebody else got it already, I just say, give me a copy of that disk. Give me a copy of that thumb drive. It already exists. I just want a copy. So that's what I asked for from the Attorney General's office. And so they kind of hemmed and hawed and said, well, there could be some confidential stuff in here. We'll have to give it to you in installments after we've redacted anything that could have a Social Security number in it or a private home address or maybe pending criminal matters, maybe, you know, that we're handling in a case. And so they've been sending me several thumb drives one at a time. The most recent one a week or so ago, just had a couple hundred more Tim Longmire emails, and I'm finding nothing in here. There's nothing where he's talking about bribery from the Attorney General's office, but I'm just reviewing them. But 13 of these emails were totally blacked out from top to bottom, even the date. You know, the two, the from, the date, nothing. It looks like Soviet Russia. And so I called up and said, what's the deal? And I said, well, we just feel like we have the right to redact. And clearly, by the title of some of them, it was like College Fellowship Program. And you could tell it looked like, who should we send to a college fellowship program? And others are maybe a little more politically sensitive. It was just ridiculous. And so we published a picture. We did a story online and published a picture of these blacked-out emails. And everyone started making fun of them. The state Republican Party started beating up on them. Even somebody from the state Democratic Party called me up and said, what are those people thinking? They look bad enough over there right now. And by the end of the day, the Attorney General's office said, fine, here's your stupid emails. They sent me the unredacted versions. And it was totally harmless. There was nothing in there that was worth blacking out. Nothing in there that would have caused a news story if they hadn't blacked it out. It was just tone deafness on their part.
All right, so the part of the story that jumped out at us at the end of the story was about the marijuana trafficking?
Oh, yeah. Well, that, almost as an aside.
Right.
Yeah.
According to, and again, nobody's been charged with anything.
Right,
Denver
right.
Squared Consulting, but according to the federal government, Mr. McIntosh and one of his employees there, who's the other fellow whose name pops up a lot, allegedly had marijuana coming in from the state of California to be distributed here in Kentucky. I guess more to come on that, maybe.
Could this be just somebody who had a side business?
Yeah, it wasn't clear to me what connection that had, if any, to the bribery, or if that's going to be pursued by the feds or not. I guess they might. There's no sign that the Tim Longmire or anybody in state government was involved in the marijuana trafficking, the alleged marijuana trafficking.
Yes, alleged.
Like that happened to be going on apparently at the same time. Almost kind of just a throwaway notice.
Wild.
Well, I always said you should buy local anyway, so that doesn't bother me too much. Let's see. What else are you working on? You told me on the phone you have a story you're working on for today?
I am. Just right now I'm looking at the money being raised by our congressional delegation, both for their campaign committees and for some of the other funds that they run for their re-elections this year. It's really stunning, although, you know, Kentucky has got two senators and it's got six House members, eight members of Congress altogether. Mm-hmm. Most of them never really get much in the way of re-election challenge. Like Hal Rogers, for example, down in Somerset, he's a Republican. He's an 18-term congressman.
Yeah.
He's not going to face a Democrat in the fall. There's no Democrat running against him. But he's already raised and spent more than $1 million on his reelection. And it's interesting the sort of things that they raise and spend money on.
Well, I guess the big race coming up, the one where that is challenged, is that Jim Gray versus Rand Paul.
U.S. Senate race, yeah, now that's a real scramble for dollars. And Rand Paul is the Republican incumbent. Jim Gray is going to be the Democrat, mayor of Lexington.
Yeah.
And so they're actually out scrambling for money. And that's, I mean, regardless, I guess, of how you feel about money in politics, that's legitimate. They got a race to run.
Yeah.
It's some of the other races where, you know, there's either a very weak challenger or literally no challenger whatsoever. Brett Guthrie over in western Kentucky, Hal Rogers down in southeastern Kentucky. It just fascinates me to watch them still raise $1 million off of people, largely off of interest groups that have business before Congress, before their committees, when they have, you know, no real reason for the money other than someone's offering the money. And I guess who says no to money?
And let's see, I also saw you'd covered a little bit of the Trump and Trump rallies and in Kentucky. Did you cover the Sanders rally?
I went over to the National Rifle Association's convention in Louisville on Friday, where Donald Trump and Senator Rand Paul and Governor Matt Bevin all spoke to them. Mm-hmm. I would imagine Donald Trump will get every vote in the room out of probably that place holding 10,000 people, and I think those will not be 10,000 Bernie Sanders or Hillary Clinton voters.
And is that where he said the deal about the potential of the Second Amendment being abolished?
Yeah, Hillary will abolish the Second Amendment, he said. He said, I don't mean change the Second Amendment, I mean abolish it. I don't know. I can't predict the future. I know 8 years ago we were told Barack Obama was going to take away all the guns, and 8 years ago...
I thought we were told later, 24 years ago that Bill Clinton was going to take all the guns
Yeah,
away.
And there still seem to be plenty of guns. We had a story in our paper today, I think, about how gun purchases are rising once again with the imminent election, the potential election of Hillary Clinton, just like they did 8 years ago with Obama's election. Mm-hmm. And there was a radiologist, I want to say from Minnesota, a doctor from Minnesota quoted in there, saying that he had 60 guns already, but he was at a gun show saying he wanted to buy some more because he was convinced Hillary wouldn't let him buy any more guns. I'm not sure what he's going to do with his 61st gun other than guard the first 60, I guess.
Well, I mean, if they can't get a bill through Congress, I don't see how they would get an amendment.
They're not going to abolish the Second Amendment short of either a constitutional convention or an amendment to the Constitution that would have to pass the majority of the states. And I can tell you right now, a majority of the states are not going to vote to repeal the Second Amendment. So that's not going to happen. The Supreme Court just ruled back in 2008 in a decision called the Heller decision that the right to bear arms in the United States is not tied to militia service. It is definitely an individual right. That was a ruling that struck down some of Washington, D.C.'s local gun control measures. Mm-hmm. And regardless of how you feel about it, the court has spoken. I know there's a lot of urgency on both sides to fill Antonin Scalia's seat with someone that reflects your own ideology. But I just don't see any kind of gun control coming to this country anytime soon. If I were the NRA, I wouldn't sweat it. I'll tell you, though, it's really good business for the gun manufacturers that make up the NRA's controlling board, though. Every time you got somebody with 60 guns back at a store saying, I'm going to buy five more, ka-ching.
John Cheeves, Lexington Herald leader, thank you for coming on with us today, sir.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
For more information or to read his stories, go to Kentucky.com. That's the Herald Leader's website. Or follow them at BG Politics on Twitter. We're Bluegrass Bios. We'll be right back after some more Bob Dylan. Stay tuned.
Ain't it just like the name?